Hello, everyone. Today, we're going to be continuing our Households of Fi series, and we're going to be following up with Vivian. And Vivian, on this conversation, had the opportunity to do a consultation or just a chat, really, with our friend Tay, who writes over at financialtortoise.com. Now, Tay actually joined us back in episode 186, and you can find that at choosefi.com/186. And the context of that interview was multiple generations under one roof. Very excited to continue this conversation and to see the parallels that Vivian is experiencing and recognize that these are challenges that lots of people in our community have. And while to some people it might seem like, you know, you're in an unusual situation, for many individuals, not only is it usual, it's a cultural norm. And so recognizing that this is a real financial consideration for people, allows us to then start to highlight best practices. And that's what we do on the Ultimate Crowdsourced Personal Finance Show. This is Choose FI.
You're listening to Choose FI Radio. The blueprint for financial independence lives here. If you're looking to unlock the secrets to financial independence and early retirement, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and join a community of like-minded people who are getting off the hamster wheel and taking control of their lives in the pursuit of financial independence. Choose FI, your home for financial independence online.
All right, guys, as mentioned, we're going to hop right into this episode, and Tay and Vivian had a chance to really go through some of the strategies and best practices, points of considerations when you're talking about multiple generations under one roof. To help me with this conversation, I have my co-host Brad here with me today. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Jonathan, I'm doing quite well. And yeah, this was a fantastic conversation. It was nice of Tay to carve out some time to speak with Vivian, and they went deep on this. And Jonathan, this was a blind spot for me and you, right? You talked about this being a normal thing in many cultures. And it was just something that I sadly was completely unaware of. But that's the beauty of having a crowdsourced show, right? Is we can learn about things that just would have never crossed our plate. And we can find people who can really explain what it's like in real life. So Tay talks about the sandwich generation, which, as he said, in many Asian cultures, the children are responsible to a large degree for taking care of their aging parents. And that could mean, in his case, he's actually living under one roof with his parents to being responsible for them financially, right? So like, this is a major, major issue for a significant portion of the population. And it's something that we're really trying to highlight because people have questions about this. But again, while this might not be what's the cultural norm in my family, I have to say it has opened my eyes to issues that I am going to be dealing with, but I just never would have thought of. So, I mean, this has been a huge benefit for me. I think it's going to be a huge benefit for the entire community because I'm going to be responsible for my parents in some way, shape, or form. While it might not be financial in the purest sense, at some point, I'm going to have to help them make decisions. I'm going to have to help prepare documents for them or, you know, some things with their health, et cetera, et cetera. So this is something that I need to start thinking about. So yeah, I mean, this was a huge benefit for me and it was just a real eye opener.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and get right into this episode. Just a few things that I think you should really be paying attention to as you're listening to this. Maybe you're taking some notes. Things that really stood out to me is just for individuals that are actually cohabiting with their parents, what is their perception or their take as they've done research currently on the ROI of long-term care insurance? Is that just an obvious choice that everybody goes and does right ahead of time? Really pay attention to what they actually said about that and what their concerns were. The other thing was, what about when there's different priorities on spending? And so maybe the parental figure has some level of income, even if it's a smaller amount, but you know, their spending goals and your spending goals and you're sharing some costs, you know, they're going in two different directions. What about those Social Security calculations? Are they eligible for it? You know, especially when you're talking about an immigrant family, do they even know how it works and what they're eligible for and what the nuance is there and at what point that would actually kick in? There's a lot of complicated financial stuff that happens right between the ages of 59 and 65. You have Social Security that you're going to become eligible for. You're potentially eligible now to draw out of your tax advantage vehicles. And then you have Medicare kicking in at 65 and there's potentially a gap there. How do you bridge that? That and so much more. Huge thanks to Tay for coming on the show. Very generous with his time. And really, just this is an incredible conversation that you need to hear. And if you want to follow up with him, you know, you're taking some notes, you want to follow up, you have additional questions, highly encourage you to check out his site where he really documents their own journey, you know, as a sandwich generation, parents and children in the same house. And you can find him at financialtortoise.com and you can hear the episode we did with him. It was choosefi.com/186.
And Jonathan, for the audience, we're doing these Households of Fi episodes as kind of like a longitudinal study, right? So we're finding people when they're just getting into Fi. And then we're following, we're touching back with them every 3, 4, 6 months, whatever it may be, with any questions they have, just getting updates. And Vivian, if you want to catch up on her story, we introduced her on episode 221. And then her first full episode was 255. And you can always find those, choosefi.com/, and then the episode. So it's 221 or 255.
All right, guys, we're going to get out of the way and we'll follow up with you on the back end of the episode.
So I'm Tay. I have a blog called Financial Tortoise. So the area that I write about primarily is from a sandwich generation perspective. So I have two young kids and my Asian parents that actually live with us. So we've been living in a multi-generational household for about 7, 8 years now with my wife, our kids, with both my parents, all one big household. And for us, my wife and I, we had a last 10 years has been like a big financial journey for us. We paid off $105,000 in student loans while cohabiting with our parents and raising our kids. Now, you know, we really want to pursue financial independence. So that was an episode before with Choose FI, just talking about the pros and cons of a multi-generational household. It gets kind of crazy here. There's the benefits of, you know, having my parents around, being able to help out with the kids and such. But at the same time, you know, you also have your parents around to watch you, you know, with your kids and tell you how to raise your kids in your 30s. So those are the pros and cons. So yeah, that's a little bit about me. Maybe we can segue to you, Vivian.
Okay, so I'm Vivian Nim. If people have heard my story, I'm recently dealing with cancer. Fighting breast cancer. Also going through a tough time of having a separation. Before me signing up for Choose FI documentary, there's no separation, but now I'm going through a separation and a child custody battle. So it's been tough, but yeah. You know, like you, I also have parents living with me. The pro of having a parent is that they help you raise the kid.
Right.
But the con, of course, you have the parent there and
right.
They are a different generation and you know, they do things certain way that is not the same as you because it's just different generation, different misunderstanding.
Right.
The question that really concerned me since you've been through it, you live with your parent, the sandwich generation for 7 years that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, there's so much thing that you don't know that might come up, unforeseen event, because parents are getting older and you don't right. know what kind of medical condition that they may end up or medical bills. Those are the questions I have. Like, I'm not okay. sure what kind of insurance that I suppose sign them up or long-term disability.
Long-term
sure.
care, yeah. Long-term disability. Yeah.
So those are my questions.
Okay. Yeah, I got them before. So thank you for just reiterating. And then I heard your podcast with the, I think the interview with, I forgot her name, but she was a lawyer.
Yeah, she's a lawyer.
Yeah. So I was able to hear kind of your backstory so thanks for sharing. And there's a lot going through your life and trying to, you know, balance it all. But I think a lot of people can really find value in kind of hearing your story and the courage that it takes to kind of go through it. So yeah, I mean, I think it's very similar. Like you do both of your parents, your mom and your dad both live with you?
Right now, just my mom.
Okay.
Just to help out. Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask how old she is?
She's 59, so she's not 65 yet. So
okay.
She's not qualified for Medicare.
Medicare, okay. Yeah. Got it.
And she's a retired teacher, so she got some, because she worked
pension?
For LA. She worked for LAUSD.
Oh, okay.
In Los
okay.
Angeles.
Got it. Okay, okay.
So she's got some retirement, but it's not a lot. It's just basically $1,000 a month just for basic living, but it's not enough to support her own self, like if she live alone by herself.
Yeah. Do they provide, I thought LAUSD or some pension plans had healthcare gap they cover between retirement and Medicare?
You know, I'm not sure because I think because she retires younger than expected, she probably don't get the gap. I'm not sure because my mom, as our parent, they're not very good at finance. For Asian, we always joke that they always rely on their kid for retirement.
Yeah. Yeah, that's normal. I mean, yeah, it's actually yeah. like, you know, historically, that's very normal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because in Korea, like where my family's from, like that was always just kind of a norm, like the last hundreds of years. And then it's like more recently now that the younger generation is, you know, kind of struggling with that idea of like us having to take care of our parents. So like with my parents, they both applied for, I mean, the biggest benefit, I think, is a Social Security and Medicare. So I'm assuming your mom hasn't started pulling Social Security?
No, she hasn't.
She hasn't. Okay. So one thing about Social Security is that there's like a window in which she can start pulling between 62 and then right now, I think it's like a little over 66 where you're at your full age to receive the full amount of Social Security. And then if you wait until you're 70, you get a little bit more.
Okay.
So if you think about like if I got Social Security, $1,000 a month when I'm 66, if you pull it when you're 62, you get like 20-30% less. And then if you were to pull it when you're 70, you get 20-30% more. So then if you pulled early in that example of $1,000, if she started pulling when she was 62, she would be getting like $700 a month. If she waited till she was 70, she can get like $1,200 to $1,300 a month.
So my other question is, since my mom, she retired last year, do you have to work until you're 70 in order to get that?
No, so the Social Security is dependent upon the, like there's a calculation they do for credits. Like you have to get a certain number of credits. I think it's like 40. But I think the general rule of thumb is if she worked for 10 years and paid into Social Security, then she's eligible to receive it.
Okay.
So she's 61 now, right? You said she was born in 59?
59, yeah.
I think so. She should start getting, I know they started sending these Social Security summary sheets a couple years prior to turning 62 that shows, hey, if you started pulling, this is how much you would receive.
Mm-hmm.
So if not, you can go on to, I think it's a Social Security, just a website. I think it's ssa.gov. She can create an account, like plugging in her info or birth date, and then you can see the estimates of how much she would receive if she started pulling when she's 62, or she could wait until she hits the full age of 66, or if you can, she can wait until she's 70 so you can get more. So with my parents, my mom started pulling when she was like, they didn't want to pull early because then you're locked into that amount forever. So if you could wait, you want to try to wait so that you can pull as much as you can. So my dad actually waited until he was 70. You don't want to wait beyond 70 because that's the cap. Then you're not going to get any more benefit. But if you could like wait till 70, then you're getting a lot more in your benefits.
Okay. But you had to work for at least 10 years. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it's the general rule of thumb is 10 years that you paid into Social Security.
Okay.
Yeah. If you haven't started receiving those sheets, you can go to the Social Security website and then actually check how much she's eligible for. But if she's worked at LAUSD for a while, I'm assuming
she's been there for 17 years.
There shouldn't be any problem. She should be eligible. I think it's about understanding how much it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, for my parents, like we started living together right when they were starting to collect Social Security. So, I mean, the way for them, they really didn't save. I mean, they didn't even know what a 401k was.
Yeah, same here.
You know, yeah, 401k, Roth. Yeah. Like, I mean, this is all over their head.
Yeah.
And then I think the only thing they really understood was real estate because that's something that they could see. So thankfully, they had a home, which they rolled whatever remaining like equity that they had into our current home. So then they were able to, they bought the current home that we were living in. So they put in the down payment and then we essentially took over the mortgage.
Okay.
But then other than that, I mean, they didn't really have anything. So then once the basics of like, you know, the most expensive thing is really housing and transportation.
Yeah.
When you look at your budget. So then because their housing is taken care of and then they have their cars that they don't have to pay, you know, they don't have a payment on. So it's the Social Security, which is about $1,000 a month for each of them, is enough for them to live off of. So, I mean, if your mom is able to collect pension from LAUSD and Social Security, whether she pulls it early or she pulls it at full age, or, you know, if she was wanting to wait a little bit more. I mean, in my mind, if she's living with you, she doesn't have to worry about overhead, I'm assuming, right?
Yes, she doesn't have to worry about.
Right, yeah. So that, I think, helps out a lot as regards to not having, I mean, I think that's really the biggest thing with a lot of the elderly is that with Social Security, it's just not enough to pay for rent, pay for a car, and pay for food at the same time. So if you can take out the housing cost and transportation cost, then I think that I mean, like, I kind of joke around how, like, my parents are, like, living it up now. Like, you know, they get to do whatever they want. Like, it's funny, like, I wake up because I've been working at home now. And then I see, like, my mom's schedule. She wakes up, she gets breakfast for my dad. And then she, like, just goes and watch Korean dramas for 3 hours. Takes a nap. I was like, well, that's nice.
That's nice.
Yeah. I was like, I wish I could do that one day.
Yeah. But my mom's different. She's more of outgoing. She likes to go out and travel one day. And that's what she would like to do. And my dad, same thing. He would like to go and travel, but unfortunately their income is not high enough for them to travel. So
maybe you can help them out with the I don't know if you've learned the travel hacking.
I'm learning right now.
Brad and Jonathan has a really great episode. It's like one of the earlier ones. They talk about the Chase Gauntlet.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's how I learned it. I was able to actually take my parents to Hawaii with my kids, with the hotels and the flights all through Travel Points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
Before COVID hit, yeah.
And
yeah.
That's my goal coming up is to take my parents and my daughter to Hawaii.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
After this whole COVID.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Hawaii, I think, is there's a lot of different... If you just Google how to fly to Hawaii on points, there's so many different routes that you can take.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, once you figure that out, it's like one of those pillars of FI that you have to... like one of those skill sets that you have to learn.
That's true. It's always good to have skill set like that.
yeah, definitely. As regards to healthcare, so so what coverage does your mom have right now?
So right now, I think she's getting private insurance. She's getting a Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Okay.
My mom's not as healthy as she used to. The reason why she's retired because she has stroke and she's no longer able to. She always fall on her when she was at work. So I think she break her back, kind of rupture her tendon. Also, and she has surgery for that. She's better now, but that's the whole main reason why she's retired. I think healthcare is probably going to cost a lot for her. Right now, she has private insurance. Not sure how much she paid for it, but I know it's not cheap. She got Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Got it. Okay. So she's 61, so she has 4 years until she's eligible for Medicare. So there isn't really like an ideal solution before Medicare hits. I think it's getting a private insurance. Healthcare insurance. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But just a couple of things regarding Medicare that you do want to know is that the enrollment period is pretty sensitive. Like there's a 7-month window that you have to enroll, which is 3 months before she turns 65. So you want to like market somewhere like that 3 months before she turns 65 and then 3 months after she turns 65, like there's a 7-month window in which you have to make sure you enroll in Medicare. And then there's like different parts to Medicare. There's like part A, B, C, and D. And then A and B is like hospital and Medicare. Most people don't realize though is that the basic part of Medicare is covered with, you know, just being eligible for Medicare. But then if you want the medical insurance, like the hospital visits covered, you actually have to pay a premium for that, which I think is like $100 or $200 a month. And what they do is if you're collecting Social Security, they will just pull it out of your Social Security amount. So that was one of the things that I saw with my mom's Social Security. She's like, well, I thought I was eligible for like, you know, 900. How come I'm only getting 700? And then when we looked at it, we're like, oh, they're taking, because you said you wanted the Part B of Medicare, they're taking that portion out before the Social Security comes to you. So that's just something that you want to, like, as she gets closer to 65, you want to just make sure that she doesn't miss that window. And then you're helping her to apply for it. So she gets the Medicare. And then if you want to, it's all actually the same portal that you apply for Medicare and Social Security.
Okay.
Yeah. So if you're going to wait until she turns 65 to collect Social Security, then you can say when you're applying for Medicare, I want to accept Social Security now, or I want to wait until later. So then it's kind of like the key ages that you want to keep in back of your mind. I mean, she's like right around the corner. She's 61. Like, so she's eligible for Social Security 62. She's eligible for Medicare 65. And then you guys can choose when to actually pull out Social Security. So you'll need to kind of work through her overhead expenses, what she needs to see when the right time to pull those triggers are.
Okay. Another thing is that, so do you have long-term care for your parents?
No, I don't.
No? Okay.
Yeah. So it's something that I've read about too, but then from what I've heard, I guess it's really hard to get like affordable one now. I guess you could a little while back. I mean, this is just kind of from what I've heard. Yeah. I haven't gotten long-term care insurance. Well, I've started researching into what are some long-term care options. They have, let me see if I can pull it up.
Yeah, the reason why that's in back in my head because my mom, like I said, she had stroke. Right now she can move normally, but you never know when another stroke got hit and one day she can't move anymore. So
exactly. Yeah.
She might need long-term care or some kind of care. Yeah. Maybe I should do more research on that. But I don't think Medicare, I'm not sure they have offer long-term care, right?
So I think Medicare only covers portion of long-term care. I think, don't quote me on this, but I think it's just if they were to go to the hospital for surgery and they're staying at the hospital for like recovery or long-term care just for recovery, I think that portion is covered.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the full like long-term care. I definitely know that. So that's something that like I've been thinking about and I don't really have a good solution at this point as well. It's just, I know that there's like being at home and you can hire like skilled nursing to come and then I think some parts of it are covered, some parts of it are not. And then there's like assisted living place or like skilled nursing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's a very important topic that I'm sure like no one has a really good solution on yet. It just, in my mind, I guess what I always kind of think about is that it's going to happen.
That's
so,
what you figure out.
So it's like, I got to, end of the day, like, I think one of the things I really appreciate about, you know, the FI community is that like, I shared this story when I was going through the interview with Brad and Jonathan was with my wife's grandmother. She was diagnosed with lung cancer and she was 90 at the time. And then it was interesting because a lot of the adults weren't in a financial position to be able to kind of step in and then like even spend the time to kind of take care of her or to kind of navigate the system with her.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think that's what kind of like I've been in back of my mind thinking is like, you know, there's a lot of different options we can go. You can go at home or you can find assisted living or something that could be compatible. But at the same time, like if I'm not in a strong financial position where I could maybe step away from my job for a little bit or I don't have the cushion, then I can't even think about that when the time comes. So I think that's where whenever I kind of threw out this question about how do we best take care of our aging parents if they haven't like taken care of themselves financially. Even like a lot of the older kind of folks, I'm not sure if you are familiar with Jim Collins, Jill Collins.
Yeah.
So Simple Path Wealth. I asked him that exact same question when I met him. And he said, the best thing you can do is take care of yourself. Like if you're in the strongest financial position, that's how you can take care of the people around you.
That's true.
The loved ones. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of, I've been doing some research, but like, I don't have a clear defined, like this is the right long-term care. It's more of like, okay, I need to get my finances and our household as strong as possible. And then if time comes where they really need my time or our help, then I have the resource. I can step away from my job if I need to and then be able to assist in that way.
Hey, this is Andrew from the Choose FI team. I hope you're enjoying the show. We're going to get right back to it after these quick messages.
So that's kind of lead me to another question for you. So for your FI number, do you put them into your spends and, you know, thinking about the healthcare in the future, do you plan them into your spends for your FI number?
I haven't really thought about the healthcare, but we've definitely considered their overhead. So then like our current home right now, we incorporate the cost of the home into our kind of long-term, like the end of the day, everyone's going to need a roof over their head, including my parents. It's interesting because we joke around how, oh, like with just my wife and I and our kids, we could totally downsize into this like tiny place and then we can pursue FI faster. But that's not an option for us because, you know, we have our parents with us. So for us, we incorporate like, okay, in order to kind of maintain this house so that they have a roof over their head later on, you know, with long-term care, if they want to, you know, I'm sure most people want to age in place, age at home. So then we always incorporate the cost of this home into our FI number.
Okay. Right now, I'm just struggling a little bit because my mom, like I say, from a different generation.
Yeah.
I did listen to the podcast of your episode. And one thing that really hit me, what you say is, I think at the end, you really have to have a lot of compassion and understanding of your parent. Because, for example, my mom lived through Vietnam War.
Right.
So she when we go to Costco, oh my God, that's my huge expense right now. She would rack up so much food and hoard so much food and water. And it drives me crazy because things that we don't need right now.
Right.
But because her generation,
the
where
scarcity,
she used to live.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's what she's been doing. And it's been a little challenge.
how do you navigate some of the, I guess, if you can call it like conflicts or these different views on how to approach food?
Because, you know, I'm Asian. I'm not sure about how your parents, but my parents, they don't budget.
Yeah. There's no budget. Yeah.
They don't know what that means. Especially when it comes to food. I guess Asian, they like to feed you and make sure you're happy.
Right.
So especially when it comes to food, there's no budget. When I told my mom, hey, your limit with, let's say, 600 a month, and she can't do it. It's just, I'm still trying to figure out how to navigate this.
Do you guys have any, like, share cost at home? Does she like?
I think she. The only thing she help out right now is the food, because that's our number one expense. Because she just like to spend wherever she sees.
Yeah.
But overall, I pay for everything else. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I assume she's like helping out with cooking and.
Yes. Okay. And help with my child. So.
Yeah.
Right. That's really helpful.
How do you do childcare right now?
Right now, since we're still going through a custody battle, my mom's just watching her when I go to work.
Okay.
So just the reason why my mom here with me, because she's watching my child here, and my sister have kids too, so my dad over there watching the kids. So,
oh, wow.
So it's just kind of like hectic, but
yeah.
So it's not just my mom I had to take care of, but my dad too in the future, but we'll see
how it goes. Yeah, it's that perfect sandwich generation situation where, like, especially when you have, like, young kids, the childcare, I think, is the biggest surprise and the challenge. That was a big reason why we decided to cohabitate with my parents, because when my wife was pregnant, we were like, we're just scratching our head on like, how are we gonna do childcare? Like, drop them off somewhere, like, and they're like 6 months old, or you hire like an in-house nanny, but then they're like super expensive, so it doesn't make sense. So I'm just like, that was one of the big reasons why I think at the time, like, not by choice, we're like, all right, let's try this cohabitation thing and then see how it works out. But surprisingly, I mean, with all the ups and downs, I think now in hindsight, we kind of look at like that helped us because we were able to commit full time into our careers. And then like right now in our 30s, you know, those are the times when you're kind of building up your career and your experience. So then, you know, if you were to take a step back, then you got to kind of get back into it later on, which is a little bit harder to do. So I think in hindsight, it was kind of a, I mean, there's a cost to everything, right? It doesn't come for free, like living with your parents. Yeah. Like, you know, having your mom there to watch your kid is like, in theory, great, but at the same time, like, comes with all the other, like, advice on how to raise your kids.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Don't do this, don't do that. Yeah. Back in my days.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm still very grateful for my mom to be here, you know.
Yeah.
With the childcare is the huge expense. So I'm grateful. Whatever stress I'm going through, she's going through the same thing. So it's always good to have parents, even though there's a lot of conflict, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So are you guys considering kind of cohabiting together in the long run?
You know, I drive my parent crazy too. I'm not sure about you, how you drive your parent, but I drive her crazy too. Sometimes she threatens me. She's like, I'm going to go back to Vietnam and live here and leave you. So I'm not sure what she want to do. I mean, my mom, she loves to travel too. So she haven't been in her country for a long time. So she might want to go back there and maybe for a month and just travel around and come back.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's such a different like dynamic living together as adults, especially I think kind of what you're talking about when there's this like huge cultural chasm too. I think that's one of the big things that my wife and I really learned is just like empathizing, you know, understand like where they're coming from. Like with my mom, I think it's like you talk about like your mom like buys a lot of food. Like my parents grew up like in the post-Korean War generation. So then like they never threw away food. So yes, then I think they were, I mean, if you think about it, like it's a small thing, like food, right? Kitchen food. But then we had so many conflicts as regards to like the kids are only done halfway through the rice and like, we're going to throw it away now. And they're like, and my mom's like, no, like you got to keep that. Like you can feed them tomorrow. I'm like, but that doesn't make sense. Like now, like you're just adding more clutter or.
Yeah.
My wife and I joke around, that's like the kitchen's a battleground. Mm-hmm. And then we even thought about like, we should just build a second kitchen because this is not going to work.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's
but true. I mean, I think all of it in the last 7-8 years, just it really helped us to reflect on, you know, there's no winning here. It's more of like, why is she so fired up about this topic? And then just like, they don't understand where we're coming from, but they're trying. Like it takes a lot of effort for us to really try to understand where they're coming from and why they're behaving in that way. And then I think that's where like it builds a lot of just compassion and empathy that like we wouldn't have if we didn't go through this process of living together.
That's true. I agree. And yeah. and it's tough, especially when you have parents always set on their way.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So we have to be more compassionate and more empathetic.
Yeah. And they, I mean, they've lived for 60, 70 years, their way of life. And that's how they survived. Yeah. And that's how they got here through all of the tribulations that they've gone through in their life. And that's how they came to this point, that stubbornness and grit. So then it's like, I'm not going to change that.
True. Are you concerned at all of unforeseen like expense that might come your way when your parents grow older? Or just follow a J.L. Collin advice and just build up the finance?
Yeah, that's kind of a, I mean, I think if you look at, you know, like your just finances, there's different ways you can save, like, you know, your retirement account, your 401k, your Roth. But I think part of it too is like, we can't really control our parents, kind of like you said. So then even if I tell my mom, it's like, you should save your money here. Like, I don't know if she's going to really listen.
Yeah.
So end of the day, you know, we can provide the overhead. It's mutually beneficial. But I think the approach that we're taking is, what we can control is our finances. Let's get that as strong as possible. Let's try to increase our savings rate. Let's try to live below our means. While we're both able to work full time, let's be able to just get all of our finances as strong as possible so that if there are unexpected expenses, we can handle it together. You know, they joke around how, I'm sure you've heard about this, how like, you know, when people are under financial duress, you can't really think straight. Like, you know, people's IQ, because you're just kind of like in that survival mode so that you're not able to kind of solve problems in a very smart way. So I think the thought is, you know, if we can get our finances in order and we're not having to worry about our day-to-day, if something did happen to my parents where we needed to step in and we needed help more, then it's okay. Like, we can figure it out. We can step in, we can figure it out. If one of us had to step away from our jobs and spend a little more time at home, we can figure this out. But like, we're not burdened by this, like the stress of finance. I think that's the big thing that we're trying to mitigate.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, I'm trying to save up as much as I can. I told my mom I try to do 50% of my income. Yeah. She think I'm crazy, so.
Does your mom have any, do they think it's kind of weird that like, hey, now you've worked really hard, you became a pharmacist, and why are you living? And why are you living so frugally? Like, you know, you should be.
They think I'm stingy and stingy. And I'm not sure that's how your parents call me stingy. Like, you have money, why can't you just, you know, it's just food, you know, it's not
totally
big deal.
Just
hoard all these food that we don't use and it will go bad in a few months.
I think my parents are, they think it's like, my wife and I went the reverse. As we made more money, like, we became stingier. Because I think part of it is I'm sure you can attest to this, like, part of the like Asian culture, Korean culture too, is like you wear your wealth on your sleeve, right? Like, it depends on it's so much of the story behind, I think, immigrants is that, hey, they came here and sacrificed so that you can live that upper middle class life that we saw and we envied. So you should be driving a nice car. You should be going on vacation.
Exactly.
You should express you should show your success so I can boast to my friends about how successful my kids are.
Exactly.
Yet, like, I'm embarrassed because you're driving this beat up old car and you're not willing to go out and, you know, buy fancy food. So,
that's exactly what I'm going through right now. Because when I had my child, I wear my maternity pant for 2 years because I try to lose weight. And my mom was like, you're a pharmacist, you embarrass me. What?
Right.
You know, I didn't raise you to be like this. So, like, okay, mom.
Yeah, I can't take you anywhere, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, but poor pharmacist.
I have another goal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a very, I think there's the pursuing FI, I think there's that other kind of a hurdle to overcome. Coming from more of an immigrant family, I think that cultural barrier that you have to overcome.
Yeah.
Cool. Do you have any, like, when you first heard about like the whole, I guess, choose FI or like financial independence, is there anything else that really excites you about it or that you want to achieve through?
What really excites me about is, you know, at the beginning, I thought you need to have a business in order to have like a financial independence. But when I find out about choose FI, I realized you don't need a business. You just need to save a lot. That's what excites me. Another thing is that I just started. So I just maxed out my 401k.
That's exciting.
Yes, that is exciting. So the next part is to max out the Roth before this year end.
Right.
And, you know, I just need to dig deep on what to invest in. I think that's where I am now.
Got it. Yeah, like the best investing book that I've read is Jim Collins's
Yes,
A Simple Path to Wealth. Like, it just simplifies everything. Yeah, I would totally recommend, like, just follow the principles in that book. Yeah, when it comes to investing.
I am following his principle right now, but I also listened to the other podcast that say as you age, it's going to get riskier. So we'll see how it goes. But I'm not trying to be fancy. I'm just trying to be simple.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is, like, it's just so simple. And then it's like so much of this whole FI journey is the savings rate and then putting it into, like, smart investments. So then I think we can always kind of refine it later on. But initially, when you're getting started, you just need to, it's like I use this analogy with my wife all the time. Like, right now we just have a shovel. We just got to shovel as much as we can in there and then, you know, let it just compound and grow.
That's true.
Cool. Do you have any other, like, money challenges that you're, that's on top of your mind outside of the items that we discussed?
Oh, you have to, I'm not sure how old your children is. Have you put aside money for college? I think that's another, because I spoke with the lawyer last time about it also.
Yeah, I think she mentioned the 529s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we have, my kids are 4 and 6, so they're still fairly young too. So we started a 529 for them. We have some in there. We put a little bit in. I mean, I think the other part too that I've thought a lot about, and then Brad and Jonathan talks about a lot in their other podcast, is the future of work. How it's going to, it could look very different, just like the future of work today looks very different from 20, 30 years ago. So, you know, we still want to have some in the 529, but I think the other thing that is making me think a lot about is, like, with my parents, they didn't know anything about after college. All they knew was just go to college, get a good degree, and then, like, you're on your own, but, like, hey, just pick from these, like, 5 careers. Like, you can be a lawyer, you know, like, work in healthcare, be an engineer, like, pick one of these and you're good. Like, that's what I've seen, like, people who are successful, that's what they've done. But the working world is, it's constantly changing and so dynamic. So I think for me, I think as I'm kind of learning more about just kind of the whole FI community, thinking about how do I, it's not just about saving for college, but how do I prepare them so they're ready to be productive adults? I think Brad talked about, like, how he was talking to his daughter about how she can, like, start a business. And I think she's only like 10 or 12. But then, like, I mean, for me, I think that's, like, my kids are a little bit, I try to talk to them, but they just, you know, just eat the book right now. But I think those are kind of things that in the back of my mind is like, oh, I don't want to just blindly put save for college. And then the value of college is so different now. So then like, it's more of how do we approach this in a smart way so that if they do go to college, that it's most affordable and then it's most impactful in their future career and what they want to do. So I think that's the kind of thing in back of my mind is saving for college is important, but, like, be very intentional and purposeful on, like, why we're saving and towards what direction. I think the biggest thing is I want to equip my kids to be able to navigate the working world later on without just believing that, hey, if you go to college, get a degree, like, the job will be there, because it's not. Mm-hmm. It's like the world is changing.
Yeah. And that's my concern too with the 529, because I mean, I want to save for college, but what happens if my daughter don't want to go to college?
Right. And, exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and with this online world now, it's so much easier for them to start business than back in the old day.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm just thinking, if I put everything in the 529 and then she doesn't go to college, what can I do with that kind of finance or money?
I think there's some flexibility with 529. I think someone else can use it for their education, or you can use it for your own education too. So then,
business education, probably, right?
Does
that count? Like, if they,
I don't know the specifics, but I think it's the broad kind of the umbrella of what's considered education. I think you can use it for, like, technical schools too. But my wife and I even joked around how, like, yeah, if our kids don't go and they don't use it, like, I'll use it. Like, I don't mind going back to school. I'll learn something,
right.
You know, by that time. Yeah. So I think there's a purpose for it, but we don't want to just blindly save up. So I think it's a good thought that you have as regards to what if your daughter doesn't want to go to college, or what if she wants to pursue some other career. But I think there is some flexibility that, you know, if you had a niece that is wanting to go to college, I think you can redirect that fund to somebody else, or you can pass down to your grandchildren, like your daughters. Like, so it's, I think there's some flexibility around it, but I think it's it's a good question to ask. Like, let's not just blindly save for college, but like think about right. like why we're saving.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple other things that I think it'd be good for you to start thinking about with your parents is also estate planning. I'm not sure if you are you ever had that conversation with your parents.
Oh, boy. I don't think I have. So I mean, I think we have briefly, but it's just nothing serious. You just say, oh, I put your name on the benefit on the bank account. They mentioned who should I put. That's all I did. Yeah. But nothing it. Like Got going it. Through the lawyer and do estate planning.
Yeah.
But that's something, you know, to bring up.
Yeah, definitely. Like if you haven't, have you done your estate planning?
No, I'm still in the process. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, we just did it like last year. So then we got a trust, got the power of attorney and all of that. So I think that's probably a good thing to start thinking about for yourself and your daughter. There's a lot as regards to like, you know, if something was happened to you, like who would have custody of your daughter? It's not as like black and white from what I've heard. So we went through and just got a whole trust and got all the paperwork done. And that also motivated us to talk to my parents about it. And then so they went out and got a trust and a will and power of attorney, all of that completed. So that's I think that's pretty important as they age. Because that's one of the other things that I saw with my wife's grandmother was she didn't have any of the paperwork ready. So then it was just a lot of the scrambling at the end, trying to get the right paperwork, who's going to make the decision for at the hospital. And so it's like, I think the lack of just financial preparation and the legal document is just, those are the times that you don't want to be, if our parents get sick, we want to spend time with them, not right. be thinking That's about true. Like money, not thinking about like, oh, we need, like, we don't have this medical directive. So like, it's important to start thinking about all those before it's too late.
That's true.
Yeah, like estate planning, I think is pretty important. And then the other one is just general, like having money conversations with your parents, like regarding Social Security, Medicare. And that kind of segues into like, you start understanding like what accounts they have. And then you start getting like, okay, where do they have their checking account? Like, do they write their password down anywhere? Like, you know, so just kind of getting little by little, getting those information prepared will just help with anything down the line if something was to happen. There's stuff that you want to start thinking about.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. Hopefully next year I'm doing an estate plan, because right now I'm just going through custody.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through all that first and then estate planning. And yeah, I'll make a plan.
Yeah, little by little.
Yeah, little by little.
Yeah, just one step at a time.
I think that's all the question I have, Tay. I can't think of anything else.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks for sharing your story. I mean, I heard your last podcast and I know you're just going through a lot in your life. And I think a lot of people can really find value and just the courage that it takes for you to navigate this and think about your parents, about your daughter, and, you know, being able to pursue FI. There's a lot, but, you know, it's if you can do it, you know, other people can do it too, right?
Well, I thank you for being on here and talk to me, because it helped motivate me. At time, I just feel like maybe I can do this, but
yeah.
Every time when we have this counseling meeting, it helped motivate me again. So I appreciate all your advice.
Yeah,
so thank
definitely.
You,
Kate. Yeah, FI is it's a slow path, but then every time, as long as you're making progress, that's what matters. Because when you first hear about it, you're like, I want to get there quickly as possible. Yeah. But it's like, it's not an overnight. It takes years. But as long as you're moving towards the right direction, that's you're doing things right. So cool. Well, thank you so much, Vivian.
Bye.
All right, Brad, I loved how the episode came together. I love how they were able to tie some very actionable details that people need to be considering with really what Vivian's actual goals are, and maybe to some degree what her mom's goals are, right, in this case. I mean, that's a conversation that needs to be had. And it looks like with some of the framework that Tay was able to provide, they will have some direction for some conversations that need to be had over the next, you know, 6 months to a year. I'm curious, and you know, what in particular stood out for you that we should start with?
Yeah, I think for me, one of the most important kind of concepts just generally in life, but also when it comes to interpersonal dynamics, is there's a cost for everything, right? That was a quote in there, which kind of slipped by, but I thought it was just really, really important to know that there are positives and there are negatives from situations. And you need to really think about, hey, what is this going to look like when we're living together? And you have to give people some grace. Also, right? Like, you're putting together multiple families. So there's a cost for everything. And what that meant was there are huge, huge positives of having your parents around. In their case, the grandkids get to grow up with their grandparents around and all the wisdom and love that that brings. But obviously, having extra people in your household, there are going to be some minor conflicts. And you have to be completely aware that, I mean, that's just table stakes, right? Like, you know, when you introduce new people into your house full time, like, there are going to be conflicts. So just going into the situation with that in mind and knowing, keeping in the back of your mind, like always, wow, there are so many positives, not to mention childcare, right? Like, hey, we want to go out on a date or we want to take a 2-night weekend vacation. Well, you've got built-in childcare there, right? So I mean, that's pretty darn amazing. And that, in a lot of senses, makes up for these natural conflicts that are going to arise. So yeah, I mean, Jonathan, I don't have anything like hugely actionable here, but you have to just generally be aware of this. And I think it's really important.
The other conversation that they had was really talking about long-term care insurance, the cost of long-term care insurance, and how it is a nuanced conversation. And you know, I haven't done a ton of research on this personally, but my understanding from conversations that I've had and that I've gleaned is that long-term care insurance used to be much more affordable. The premiums used to be about half of what they are now, maybe even a third of what they are now. And as long as you locked it in before someone was, say, 55 years old or 60 years old, you could make a very compelling case from an ROI perspective that you should probably just go ahead and do that. So the costs have gone up pretty dramatically. And there is a question about whether or not it's, you know, worth it. And again, to your point, Brad, the opportunity cost of doing it versus not doing it. And I think one thing that Tay said that I think was very wise is the best thing that you can do for your parents is to take care of yourself and get to the point where you are financially independent as quickly as possible. Because ultimately, as they get older, as they need more care, what they are probably going to need and what is implicitly, you know, it's embedded in this idea is they're going to need more of your help, more of your time. Everything is more stressful and more expensive when you have no time because you're stuck in a job to afford the premiums on the long-term care insurance. And that's a guaranteed locked-in cost that you're accepting, you know, potentially way earlier than you need to. So it is a balancing act. I mean, you could hear the level of discomfort in Tay's voice as he described it. It's not like something that there is an easy answer for. Healthcare is fundamentally broken here in the United States, and we're all just kind of in a holding pattern. But, you know, with that in mind, we kind of have to work with the best we have, in which case they're kind of getting the problem down into really for them, the two things that stood out, Brad, was how do we manage the gap between current age, which is mid, late 50s to 65, where Medicare kicks in? And then how do we navigate Social Security as part of our financial planning? Those are the two things that I thought this episode really honed in on. And I think if you tie that with the fact that we do need to have these conversations, then we probably need to do some sort of estate planning / legacy binder around it. Those three pillars right there are massive for any multi-generational family.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agreed. And yeah, I mean, it brings to mind that we need to get someone on the show who's a true expert in Social Security. Right? And making the decision of when do I start taking this? Because there are lots of decision points in there. And of course, it's always going to depend on your personal situation and what your income and assets look like, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, there are decision points that people need to make that are critically important. So, I mean, that's something, Jonathan, we have not tackled overtly on the show in 400 plus episodes. So, I mean, I think that's something that clearly is something we need to look into ASAP. And yeah, it's funny, you mentioned, you know, really these conversations. I think that's one of the things that I wanted to highlight. And I talked about this on the front half of the intro of the episode is this brought up for me, like you said, that binder, that family emergency binder and case of emergency binder that Chelsea Brennan talked about. This is something that you're going to have conversations with your parents, and you're going to have some sense of what are their assets? Where are these things? You know, Tay brought up, like, where are their accounts? What are the passwords? You know, if they're incapacitated, how can you get into these accounts? How can you maybe pay bills that, you know, I mean, you don't want things getting into a point where they're going to collections because of an emergency that you just simply didn't plan for. And I think that's where, you know, this binder that Chelsea put together is remarkable. And yeah, you can always find that at chooseify.com/binder. This is something that literally thousands of people have bought and downloaded and taken action on. And I mean, it's not easy, right? I mean, it's Jonathan, you know, it takes a couple hours to put this together at least, but it's probably the best 5 to 10 hours you're ever going to spend because all of that information, like I think about that, you know, if I get hit by a bus, how much information is stored in my head that Laura would have to be scrambling for, Yep. I mean, that's absurd. You know, that's negligence on my part. And, you know, this is something that I've kind of dabbled with in terms of filling out. But if I'm completely honest with myself and everybody listening, like, I haven't done a 100% complete job on that. And again, I think that's just negligence.
Ours is looking pretty good. Danny and I have been working on it. So she's put some energy into that, and we've had the conversations. I'm pretty happy with what she's got on paper there. I think we still have, there's just one section left that we are still kind of hashing out. And it's more just like, great, it's all there, but what does it mean? It's a familiarity with it, right? This should also come with conversations like, here's how I want you to use it. I'm proud to say that that has been handled on the Mendonca household, and I'll give you a little go about finishing it up yourself. all right. So again, huge thanks to Tay for joining us on the show today. Go let him know what you think about this episode. Check out his website, financialtortoise.com, and Vivian for sharing her story and coming on. Just really valuable for all of us to kind of hear the questions that she actually has, because this is life, my friends. This is life. And if you are trying to get started on your own path to financial independence, you know, this sounded appealing, but you realize, you know, you're still trying to understand what some of these terms are, and you're trying to look for an on-ramp to get started, let me encourage you, go to choosefi.com/start. We've put all of our resources there for you in one easy place for you to quickly on-ramp yourself and your family to this path to financial independence. The fire is spreading, my friends. We'll see you next time as we continue to go down the road less traveled.
If this episode was helpful to you, don't forget to subscribe. If you want to help spread the word, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends about us. We can be found on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere you listen to podcasts. While you're there, don't forget to check out our other shows like Everyday Courage with Julian Johnsrud and Rebel Entrepreneur with Alan Dalnigan. If you would like a free bite-sized course to jumpstart your financial independence, check out choosefi.com/challenge. Choosefi is produced by Andrew Mendonca and Zachary Tan and is a production of Choosefi Media Incorporated. Choosefi.com is managed by Annie Sheely with William McVeigh, MK Williams, Melissa Lagerquist, Liz Kessler, Stephen Heptig, Kelly Black, and Jennifer Ma. And Ed T is our CEO. Thanks for listening.